Whenever you're ready, Maestro.
Ready.
Get all your mucus out.
Hold on. I know.
It's all good.
This episode is brought to you by Burt's Bees Natural Throat Drops.
This episode is brought to you by mucus.
Right.
What would you say you do here?
Have a good time all the time.
Who's got it better than us?
Nobody!
What in God's holy name are you blathering about?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
I have to be realistic.
What do you love about music?
Being realistic.
As the story grows.
Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for joining us again for the second chapter of As the Story Grows. My name is Trav, and as always is my cousin and cohort, Steven Sorrow. Steven, say hi to the boys and girls.
Howdy. Hello.
All right. I'm going to apologize ahead of time. I'm a little bit under the weather, and I'm going to try not to cough into your ear holes the whole night, but I can't make any guarantees. But I'm going to leave the introductions for this guest this week up to Steven, because he's got a heck of a lot more things to say about him than I do. So, Steven, take it away. Who are we talking to this week?
We are talking to the man, the myth, the legend.
Oh, my God.
Jim Settle.
Oh, my God.
Master bass player.
I hear the crickets. Right on.
Jim Settle, hey, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So
it's good to see you. Lean closer to the mic, sweetie.
It's good. It's good to see you guys too. Not that this is working. I don't know what.
You guys have no idea.
For those listening at home, Jim Settle is the man with the studio, and all of his $4,000 microphones failed.
Apparently, signal chain of his, there's a dead 9-volt battery somewhere, and he hasn't found it yet. So I have 2/3 of the legendary band Tantrum of the Muse to talk to tonight, and my God, do we have stories. This is going to be a fun episode. We all go way, 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 way back.
Yeah.
And it's good to see old Captain Jim here. He moved to the West Coast, and he's got all kinds of stuff to tell us about what he's been up to with his life and everything. But you guys take it away. Pretend I don't know you guys, and let's get started with how did Jim Settle find Tantrum of the Muse?
Well,
they both go like they don't know the answer. Good, that's good. Kill some time, guys.
I'm just trying to think. Okay,
no, I think it was at the Slag show.
Yeah, we were playing a show with Jim's old band, Slag, and we had a different bass player back then, and we played a show at the Soul House, which became like the house place for us to play almost every weekend.
Right.
And then we met Jim there, and he was playing in one, like I said, one of the bands, and we ended up staying at his house, and we just went back to his place and got to know him, and
I was singing. I wasn't even playing bass on that show.
And you're 9 years older than me, and we were kind of like, at the time we were dealing with Jason Stauffer, our first bass player. He ended up never being on any of the records or anything, but he was pretty crazy, and to put it lightly. And we were looking for a new bass player, and back then we didn't have like a circle of musicians to call. And Jim had said he was a bassist. So we just called him. Said, "Hey, you said you were a bassist."
I think I said I had a bass in my basement.
Yeah, you had
to try out.
Yeah, right? You kind of hinted that you could play bass, maybe.
Yeah.
And I remember Rick and I were kind of like, "Well, give it a shot. It can't be any worse than
Jason. Can't be any worse than Jason." I heard that.
I can't believe. I don't know Jason, and I don't mean to throw the guy under the bus, but I mean if Jim Settle is the least of the crazy options, then I can't fathom what it was like to deal with somebody like that.
Wait, what do you mean? How did I get thrown in crazy?
Okay, fine. I'm glad you brought that up. The second night I ever met you, we played together all the time. I used to be in a metal band called Crutch, and then they switched the name to Alathian. And it was like the Crutch and Tantrum circus everywhere we went. And one night, I think it was in Maryland, we were sitting at that diner with the high back at the bench.
Denny's, I think, and it was. They had those.
It
Denny's.
Wasn't a Denny's. It was called. Yeah, it looked like a Denny's. It was called like Iron Skillet or something.
That's right.
Iron Skillet.
Yeah. In Delaware, yeah.
And I was sitting there telling a story, and Jim and his girl was sitting on the bench in back of me, and as I was saying what I was saying, everyone was kind of laughing a little harder than they should have been. I really wasn't saying anything funny, but I was kind of like, okay, they must all think I'm being hilarious right now at 3 in the morning. I don't know. And here it turns out that Jim had laid down in the bench behind me and stuck his foot up over the top of the bench and made it look like a snake.
The viper.
He made it. He points his toes and makes it look like a striking snake, and he just stuck his foot up like a puppet, and it was moving around. And by the time I knew what was going on and I turned my head to see it, he struck and made the viper, or basically his freaking toenails, just karate chopped me in the neck, and everybody thought it was hilarious. So let's go back to the part where you said, "Why did I get thrown under the bus?" was crazy, because you caught me in the throat the first night I ever met you. Yeah.
Well, you know, that's how I greet people with a viper. Come on, viper it is.
Just to wrap up on the bass story and how we got started with him, we had a practice at Rick's house, and Jim came in, and I don't even remember if we had showed you Victoria Has a Secret or what, but that was the first, I think that was the first song that wasn't from the first album sessions or whatever that we had for a new album, and we played that together for the very first time as a band. And I remember you just floored me and Rick. I remember just being like, you know, we were like, yep, thank you, we'll call you, ha ha ha, yep, see ya, take care. And I remember just as soon as the doors were closed, me and Rick were like, oh my God, we're going to be so good. This guy's like way better. He's a little older. He's more experienced. He's gonna make our band so much better.
That's great.
And it's the truth. And I think Jim kind of is. I don't know how notorious you are now, but certainly for a while there, you were kind of like the bass guy that a lot of kids were.
Yeah.
Getting a lot of influence from your bass work, especially with the record we did together.
For sure. Yeah. For you guys were something to see, because Steven used to sing into a shotgun microphone stand, and he was screaming his butt off, and Jim was jumping around barefooted, playing with his feet, thrashing about on the bass. Rick jumped around while he was playing drums. It was a circus.
Everybody had some charisma for sure, but I gotta say, man, I'm not saying this just because you're on here, Jim, but you definitely brought something to the band that would never ever be there when you left. And you know, we did a version of the band without him briefly before he came back at the end there, and it was cool, it was good music, but it just wasn't Tantrum of the Muse. So I have said to Rick, in recent days, I will never play a Tantrum of the Muse, like, as Tantrum of the Muse without Rick and Jim. It just, it ain't the same. So, we had a really cool thing going, and we just kind of, we kind of got to know each other just as he joined the band. We didn't know him. And we kind of just went from there, and it was a complete crazy adventure. But
well, I appreciate that, but I also appreciate the fact, I mean, you guys as well, you know. I mean, I play with other bands. I play with great musicians, but with you guys, I could be more creative, and you guys were just as creative. So, and that's what made Tantrum.
Well, I have a question. You were singing in a band called Slag.
Yeah.
And then Tantrum said, we need a bass player. And you went, okay, and just quit Slag? Or, like what happened there?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Slag was, I mean, it was something that I was putting together because I couldn't find anybody, and we didn't even have a bass player, right? And funny thing is, I played bass, but I didn't want to play bass and sing at the same time. So I basically quit Slag and joined Tantrum.
Okay, all right.
We were like this up-and-coming, like, fire. Like, we were just like, I think Jim was like, I'm jumping with this group. It's like, clearly, like, these guys are young enough to not, like, stop, you know?
Yeah. And so, when I had to bring Steve's girlfriend on stage to play fake bass, that's when I knew it was done. Yeah. Right?
Oh, my goodness.
So.
And that's a good segue, actually, Jim, because I want to talk about, I want to just briefly talk about Intercessor.
Wait,
because Intercessor was actually a really good metal band you did kind of in the early 90s.
Yeah.
And you were like friends with Sacrament and the Believer guys, and you were in that scene. Is there anything you, dude, tell the story about Deliverance, man, when you were eating dinner with Jimmy Brown at that diner.
did you kick him in the face?
No, you know me. I love recording, you know, and I'm all into that. So we're sitting around, and I thought Deliverance album had just too much delay on his vocals.
The first one.
So I said, "Hey Jimmy," I said, "why is there so much delay on the on your vocals on that album?" And he was just like, "Who are you? What are you talking about? You know, my vocals are great on that." You know, he's like going on, and I'm going, okay, I'm just asking. He just got so pissed off at me, wouldn't talk to me the rest of the time. And I was actually with Sacrament teaching Mike Tyrone, their singer guy, who was the singer there, tempo. Because even though in Sacrament he was good, he was a great singer, but he just didn't have any rhythm, and he was always off and stuff like that. So I'm like teaching him on the road, like, you know, tempo.
Something happened with his vocals, right? And that's why they replaced him.
With
the second guy. The second guy's voice I couldn't stand. It was her, he, her, her. The
dude,
whole
it was like glass. That's what it was like.
What's the matter from his skull? They live in the rest of their state. Guys, a mighty grenade of a bird. What evidence of what's in non-existing sound? God, what a return of the Lars. But then it is what we left in life.
Wants of Violence. It's a great record, but it just isn't the vocals. It's grating.
Still haunts me today.
But you almost joined Sacrament, right?
Yeah. So basically, we were gonna, after the Haunts of Violence, they asked me if I would come in and do some stuff.
After the second album or after the first album?
It was after the first album. Sorry, first album.
What is that called? Testimony of Apocalypse.
Testimony of Apocalypse.
Yeah, I love that. That's a great record. Yeah.
Yeah, and it was something I was going to do, but the thing was, is the guys that I had in Intercessor were, I mean, they were just unbelievable guys, and to this day, I the guitar player died, you know, very young age.
I don't know anything about Intercessor. I didn't know that. What happened to him?
He got brain cancer, and it was super quick, and he passed away. So Jim Tinney, and what's funny is Jim Tinney used to give lessons to the guitar players in Sacrament. For reals.
Interesting.
Yeah. Huh. So they were Jim Tinney was like the god of guitar back then, you know. But
that's awesome.
It's sad that he passed away, and he was so good.
That is sad.
Right.
Yeah, stupid cancer.
Sad. Yeah.
Seriously.
Fuck cancer! Sorry.
You tell him, Jim.
So you had like a 4-song
demo, and we just went touring, and it's awesome because I met this guy at Cornerstone who really loved us, and he just basically spent his money on studio and taking us on tour and stuff like that. So
wow,
it was awesome. Yeah,
you got a sugar daddy at Cornerstone.
He was, and he was he started Sardis Records, and he was like all into it. And,
I remember that, Sardis Records. Sardis and what's Records. Funny is, I was coming up listening to White Cross and a lot of like metal of that late 80s or whatever, and I remember my
favorite band.
Oh, yeah. Trav, you love that band, right?
Haven. Say it again, I didn't hear you. Who?
Haven.
Dude, I love Haven.
Hey, do you know I was the one who actually got them signed? I took their demo when they couldn't go see Rex, right? And he was at Sacrament, right? Sacrament's practice, and I took their demo there.
Kevin Ayers?
Yeah.
Okay.
That is, I never even knew that. That's so funny,
I didn't know that, and I really genuinely want to talk to Kevin Ayers because I love Haven so much, and I'm gonna ask him about that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow, absolutely. How about that? Small world, man. Okay.
Yeah, I came up with like Sardonyx. Like for the big thing for us here in Pennsylvania is we had Thunder Zone, which was 90.3 WJTL's heavy metal, you know, late night on Fridays. They had this show called and I
That's
remember
right.
hearing
it was called Thunder Zone.
Thunder Zone, yeah. And it and it was I remember hearing Extraction from Mortality for the first time on there. I remember
that was so awesome.
I remember hearing Unite come in, and it was so creepy and dark.
Yeah.
And then, Sardonyx, they're a local band. Believer, of course, is a local band. Sacrament. All these bands, I was listening to them and loving them, but I didn't even realize they were all from around here.
Yeah.
So I was too young to go to concerts. And until I met Jim, he's the one who's kind of like, showed me the connections with all these people, and I'm like, holy crap. And like the only group that I really knew like personally was Thresher. They were
Thresher
out of my church. Thresher had an album called Totally Possessed, and that was like he was my Dave Kurtz, he was my he's the guy who recorded it and he's the bassist. He was my camp counselor back in like summer camp days, and you know, he was like the hair metal guy. He had the long metal hair and stuff, and I kind of looked up to him. And, you know, I was really young, so, like, I missed this, you know, this wave when it first happened. And it was amazing. I met Jim, and he was showing me VHS tapes of him playing, you know, that kind of an era of metal. And here I am thinking, and now we're doing this Tantrum of the Muse thing, which is a complete – and I remember when we played that house show, you had – was his name Mike from Sacrament?
Mike DiNato.
Yeah, Mike DiNato came
and
saw us play in your living room, of all places.
Yeah.
And that's when it really dawned on me, like, holy crap, like, we're kind of like, we've got this kind of, like, golden calf metalhead in our band, like, it's me and
send us the cow! Send us the cow.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's kind of where things were at with us, you know, with Tantrum and stuff. And, you know, me and Rick were like, you know, we were really starting to get into that classic metal and stuff. And believe it or not, we didn't even listen to like Master of Puppets or anything like that until we all started hanging out. Jim was a big influence on us with all that stuff. So
really?
we were showing you Sunny Day Real Estate, and Today is the Day.
Rubbernecker. That's all I remember. What was that?
Danielson fan.
Jesus. Quick story.
Rubbernecker.
Quick story. On tour, Tooth and Nail Records was getting rid of, I guess, all their vinyl and cassettes. So we showed up to a place in Eugene, Oregon, and I can't remember who it was, but someone gave us a whole box of Tooth and Nail cassettes, and when we opened it, there was about 10 copies of Danielson's very first album, A Prayer for Every Hour.
Yeah.
And there was Starflyer 59 Gold, and there was a couple other ones, stuff that Jim hated, like stuff that Jim would never be into. Yeah. Well, we're on tour. We're sick of listening to we were listening to the first Perfect Circle album because they had just come out, and Sunny Day Real Estate. We were just all every day it was like the same CD. So same we got let's pop the cassettes in. So we put in Danielson.
As I'm sleeping.
The first Danielson comes in, you know, let me pull my wool. All this ridiculous, crazy folk nonsense comes in, and Jim's just like, what the hell is this shit? And he hits eject and just chucks it out the window. Start unwrapping another cassette, put the other cassette in, just start from the beginning. He keeps ejecting them, throwing them out the window. We just keep unwrapping them, putting them in. Finally, he's just like, will you stop? Oh, man. Hilarious.
That had to be the worst.
But we were showing Jim like a lot of like of the weird stuff that was coming out, you know, 90s stuff, noise rock and all that stuff, and Jim was showing us like Slayer, and you know, we were familiar with Metallica from the Black Album, of course, but we just influenced each other in that way, and I think that's why modern music has such a metal influence, or mm-hmm. we had an attempt for that metal influence sound.
Right.
But now there is a song that the three of us worked on, literally wrote together.
Yes, we did.
We wrote, obviously Rick as well. Travis actually played on a track with me and Jim and Rick, and are we allowed to say the name of it on the air?
Let me check with the sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Burt's Bees Honey and Pomegranate Natural Throat Drops, because I can't stop coughing.
I just remember Travis. I remember Travis saying, "I don't want people knowing that I played on that, because." I know that song of Screw the Christian Industry was a kind of a hot topic.
Well, what, you were embarrassed?
No.
Is that what I'm hearing?
Wait a minute, let me explain.
Are you saying the music sucked?
He told me, no.
No way, that's like one of the best songs on the record.
I'm saying the fretless bass was out of tune. That's what I'm saying. No, I'm kidding.
it was that crappy organ player.
All Steven told me was, I don't know what the lyrics are going to be yet, but I know I'm going to call the song Screw the Christian Industry. And I was like, why don't you leave me out of it until I know what the lyrics are? Because I wasn't exactly sure. Just
make sure my mom approves of this.
Exactly, yeah, you know, like, you know, I still have, you know, hey, I got a reputation to uphold, you know, I'm in a crutch, you know. No, that
I don't
was,
know how, that was I don't know how true this is, but I remember an HM magazine with Living Sacrifice came out, and they were kind of hinting about what seemed like that song, and Jim was reading it, and I remember this, you were at Tom Fest and you're reading it and you're like, are they talking about us? and you straight up went to like Bruce Fatu and Doug Van Pelt and were like, are you talking about us on this? And you were like, didn't you like demand an apology or something?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, if you're gonna write stuff, but you can't, you know, you can't mention the names of it. You know what I mean? And but you know, it's directed at you. I mean, you have to protest stuff. You know me. I just gotta bring the shit up, right?
I remember Bruce performed Crutch covered. I'm not plugging it because we're not gonna sell any anyway. But Crutch covered. Breathing Murder on a Living Sacrifice tribute, and we had Bruce perform with us at a generator. Yeah, that was my choice. I remember a guy in the band wanted to cover something off Hammering Process, and I was like, dude, no. It's like, hang on, I have an idea. Let's play something awesome. And I like Hammering Process, but if you're gonna cover a song, you got to. I mean, I wanted Breathing Murder. I told Clenched Fist, I'm laying a claim on that. Anyway, Bruce was performing with us live, and I remember having a conversation in our tent where we were like, I can't believe Bruce is going to perform. We're cutting out the little flyers and sticking them on the urinals and I was like, this is all going to blow up in our face anyway. As soon as he finds out I'm the one who played drums on Screw the Christian, it's all over. And they were like, oh, if you screw this up. Like, my band was, like, nervously pissed at me because they were like, oh, man, if you screw this up, we're going to be mad at you. And I was like, dude, it's done now. I can't do nothing about it.
And then you guys were so worried about that being what screwed you up. And then, Joel, you got to tell the story. Finish the story, man.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, This episode's supposed to be about Jim, but this is a really funny story.
This is a great story, though.
Fuck Jim. Let's go to Joel.
Bruce agreed to sing Breathing Murder with us live. And he said, there's just one problem. We don't perform that song anymore. I don't remember the lyrics. So we were like, no problem. We'll write them down. So the lyrics go, breathing murder upon the early church, fueled by zeal, and et cetera, et cetera. We wrote down, and I was the only one in the band that drank at the time. Joel writes down, breathing murder upon the early church, fueled by, and he says, Trav, start listing beers. And I was like, okay, Sam Adams. So it became a thing. Like, we're sitting in the van. If anyone's ever driven from the eastern corner of Pennsylvania to Cornerstone, it's like an 18-hour trip if you don't stop. So
right.
He asked, he was like, go ahead, list beers. Dude, I listed like 90 beers. Like, it was like 6 hours later, I'd be like, 6 hours later, I'd be like, oh, Dos Equis. Like, oh, okay, and he pulled out right down. We handed him that as the lyrics, right? So we're like, here you go. Here's the words. You can start working on them. And he looks at him, and you see him lipping. He's going, breathing murder upon the early. You can see him wiggling his lips a little bit. And he started getting into the beer parts, and we're going, we're ready to die because we think he's about to start laughing. Dude, Bruce doesn't laugh. Bruce goes, these aren't the words. And we were like, yeah, you're right. They're on this.
Oh my gosh! Sorry. That's a great story, man. I love it.
I didn't mean for that to be on your episode, Jim, but that is a funny story.
Oh, I don't care. This is your episode. You guys allowed me to come on, so I appreciate that.
Screw the Christian Industry was an interesting song because we forgot that we wanted to record it, and Rick, we started tearing down the drum set, and I remember we actually dismounted the toms off the kit. And then Steven was like, wait, we forgot to record with Trav. We were going to do that song. And it was my last night, and I had to go home. I went down to, like, help produce drums, which is basically try to keep
Rick you were from there for
falling
several
off his throne. Yeah. I went down there for about – I took a week's vacation. I went down there to help you guys for, like, half the week. And
that was a blast.
It was the best time. And we actually went through – if you go listen to Screw the Christian Industry, there are no tom drums in that entire song. It's nothing but kick, snare, hi-hat, and cymbals, because there weren't any.
Right.
There were tom drums left on the kit. So I was like,
hey, as we're recording this.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, just as a sidebar, as we're recording this, I'm looking at the date. Today is the 4th of April. I believe it was 15 years ago this week we were recording. It was the beginning of April.
Well, yeah. How about that?
Huh.
It was totally
improv. Anyway, go ahead.
It was totally improv. I made it up as I went. Steven was like, play this tempo. And we piled a bunch of garbage that we found. Like, I had like a little tiny gong, and he was pulling stuff off of his mom's kitchen wall. He was like walking around with a drumstick or a wooden spoon tapping stuff. That sounds cool. That sounds cool. And he's like throwing it in his bag like he's leaving town.
Antique,
you know?
Antique cowbell.
Yeah, yeah. He lined all those up on the couch. And that's the beginning that you hear. That. That's Steven whacking weird stuff on a couch.
In real time. Like, you know, it wasn't programmed in a loop. It was me literally just playing the whole time.
Jim was playing that stupid slide whistle. That was hilarious.
Yeah.
Rick played the bongo part. But they had the percussion instruments. They didn't have the stands. So if you remember, Rick had an upright vacuum cleaner, and he tied the bongo with the electrical power cord to a vacuum.
That's right.
And I just remember looking at that and being like, this album is going to suck. Like, this is like falling apart. But,
and he was right.
That was so much fun. Clay Creek, man, that was such a blast.
And what's cool about that track is that it's kind of your track, Travis, because like we did loops, but you were the one who literally improvised and kind of was like whatever was going to carry it into something else.
Yeah,
and
for like, sure.
For about 6 minutes of that track, you were just rocking out and like
I had no idea what to do.
Yeah,
and we had no clue what we were doing. Yeah,
we did like three. We wanted to do something off, you know, spontaneous, and that I'm most proud of that song because of just sort of the completely fresh, just everyone just do something and let's capture it. And that, you know, of all the songs that were, you know, written and practiced for months and months, that it was cool to do something like that. And it actually is one of the more interesting songs on the album, I think.
Yeah, well, thank you.
Well, one that's got thrown out, that's for sure.
I thought for sure, as I climbed in the car that night to go home, I thought, well, that was a waste of time. I probably could have left 20 minutes earlier. There's no way they're going to keep that.
Is that right?
I just thought it was so thrown together. I didn't have any tom drums. You're asking a drummer to improv on a kit, and you don't have any toms. It was like, it's all snare. I was just like, it's like I'm running rudiments. I'm like practicing.
We had any music to that either, right? I came up with the organ, right?
No, we had nothing.
We did. The only thing we had was an idea, and I had a lyrical concept that I wanted to do, and even the lyrics, I lost the sheet of lyrics that I had written, and so I kind of wrote them on the spot, and, you know, just I knew what I wanted to say, and that was how it came out, and going back and just sort of layering stuff, total improv style, like no writing, no making it perfect before we did it, and I think honestly, I think it's one of the best tracks on the album. It's so fun to listen to. It's so weird. It's just unpredictable.
So let's rerail the story and get back on track here. The only reason you guys went to the studio that you did is because you guys got signed to a label that actually spent money back when labels did this. You guys got a label and wrote a check and sent
it. It's hard to believe.
Yeah, tell us about Takehold.
Well, Chad was crazy for giving us the money. money, man.
Absolutely.
God bless him, man.
I think with Chad, with that whole, Chad had a great vision back then, you know.
Totally, yeah.
And we had to chase him down. It wasn't like he came to us and like, hey, I want to sign you. I actually chased him down and, you know, calling him up and just being like, hey, look, you know, our name's out there. You know, we got people coming to our show. You need to sign us. Do you remember this, Steve?
Yeah.
At all?
Yeah, I mean, my memory of it was that we did have offers from some labels, and most of them that size or smaller. But we had a Tooth and Nail offer, and we passed on it because they wanted us to change virtually everything that we were proud of.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
In hindsight, we should have done it, but anyway. But
Takehold.
I remember Takehold was like a thing that was coming up, and I remember we were like really excited about his mission statement, that being that he wanted to kind of bridge the gap between mainstream and you know, we were kind of going through a phase where we were like, you know, we don't want to be a Christian band. We want to, you know, we want to play shows with these other bands, and Today's the Day, all these bands we dug, you know, we were in this, all this good stuff. We didn't want to be pigeonholed, and So we liked Takehold, you know, Takehold was responsible for Furnace Fest, as people, you know, a lot of people went to and know about that. And they were the only label that I think went toe-to-toe with what Tooth & Nail Records was doing. You know, I think, you know, Chad got himself into some financial, you know, debt, obviously, from being on a record label.
He's got us on his label.
He sent Tantrum to the Muse to a studio for ten days. You don't financially recover from that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we weren't prepared to be in a real studio being, you know, paid to be, you know, on a schedule. No. I mean, we did our best, but we didn't know.
We're learning parts on the spot, right?
Yeah. But Takehold was awesome, man. It was
a
cool experience. And Takehold was
becoming one of those labels where I was seeing people buying the next Takehold release. I'm not even sure who it is. Like, you know how people were like loyal to Tooth, I'm losing my voice, excuse me. You know, people are so loyal to Tooth and Nail that it was like, here's the new catalog, go circle the albums that you don't have yet. Those are the ones you're going to buy next. Absolutely. Takehold was becoming that next label where it was like, I like everything that's going on, so I'll just grab it, you know?
Yeah, he was really good.
Tantrum might have been one of the bands where people grabbed it was like, whoa, what the hell is this?
He really...
Burn that shit back!
Yeah.
He really marketed Tantrum specifically as like the weird,
like, controversial,
the creepy band you might want to like watch out for. Like, I remember the Take Hold catalog and him writing and doing a write up on us, and it was like the mystique and mystery of us was so like built up, and you know, Take Hold was a great experience, and it was a sad. It was sad when that ended, and it ended in 2002, and we were currently, I was living in Florida with Jim. By this point, the band had broken up, and, well, Rick had quit, and he was full-time with the Huntingtons, and I was in Florida. We were trying to find a new drummer.
Yeah.
Me and Jim were trying to write music, and that was one of the worst places for both of us during that time.
Yeah.
But I remember getting a call from Take Hold in Jim's office in Florida, and they said, the label's over, Chad's working for, it was Chad, he's like, I'm going to be working for Tooth & Nail, and I'm bringing all you guys over to Tooth & Nail, and we were like, awesome! But we weren't prepared at that point, we were breaking up, and we knew it, and we weren't in a position to do it, so that's why Few Left Standing and Narcissist and Under Oath, and certainly Under Oath got famous after that. They were distributing Take Hold, and
you guys, I remember being so proud of my cousin because his band is going on a 40 Days of Disaster tour. Like, you guys, like, I was actually getting phone calls from a relative from like the West Coast at like, you know, 11 o'clock at night because it was only 8.
Yeah, that was
there.
Cool.
Yeah, and I remember being like, wow, you're really doing this. How's it going? And he was like, this is crazy. <He's> like, But you guys hit the road with Under Oath. Like,
Back when Under Oath was good.
Back when they were good. They were like straight up metal for a while before they kind of went a little bit more pop, emo, whatever.
A lot more.
I'm trying to be polite, but you guys hit the road with them when they were like metal, and I was really kind of blown away that this was really happening for you. It was pretty cool, but what was the tour like? That was like you guys got around. You guys were definitely doing festivals and you were playing some big shows, but that was like the only strung together major tour that you did, right?
It was the only major tour. Yeah, I mean, we did smaller ones. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Right.
But it was more like 60 some days, because what it didn't count was the few days we played going to Cornerstone and the time we were out like waiting for Cornerstone to start, and then the shows we played kind of coming back from Cornerstone. It was about 65 days at least we were out.
The gas money shows.
Seriously.
Yeah, but that was a really awesome experience. But looking back, I kind of regret a lot of how my perspective of it was, and kind of wish that we could do it over again. I think things would be so different if we, you know. It's funny. I always say it's crazy that we got all that opportunity handed to us at a time when we were too young and stupid to really appreciate it.
Yeah,
or our lives were not in the best of place to appreciate it. Nowadays, it's like GPS and. Like, you know, kind of the perspective of not worrying about making it and being a rock star and all that stuff.
You know, Steve,
freeing.
You know, I look at it as we were out there for a purpose, and people were like touched by it, or people changed by it. And if it was just one, good enough. But we were put in that position just to make that happen. You know, to make that happen. So
sure.
You know,
I
don't regret any of it. You know, no matter how bad I was or how effed up I was or whatever, I don't regret any of it.
Yeah.
I don't.
I was talking to one of the guys from Few Left Standing recently, and he was like, oh, man, you know, we loved hanging out with you guys, man. Even when Jim was sleeping at Tom Fest with some girl he didn't know was, like, snuggled up to him at Tom Fest in a sleeping bag.
Do you want to hear his story? No, wait, hold on. That was a little this, right? And then it was, you know, I remember waking up. I have a girl on both sides, Chad looking down and saying, can I talk to you?
I remember we rolled up to Tom Fest and we opened the door.
All the beers fell out.
All the Zima, because we were a bunch of wimps drinking Zima.
Zima?
Yeah. Dude, oh I had nothing to do with Zima. That was Steve.
Yeah, I liked it, I have to be honest. We rolled into Tom Fest, we get out of the van. I mean, it's like, here we are. Christian Music Festival, open the slide door. Four bottles of Zima come rolling out. We grab them, quickly throw them back in the van.
Oh,
welcome.
My God.
Thank you, Jesus. We're here to minister. Oh,
yeah.
My God.
Yeah. Can nice. I talk to you? That's all I remember Chad saying. Can I talk to you? And I'm looking up going, shit. All right. So I'm getting up. I start talking with him. You know, and he's like, you know, this is stuff that we don't do at a Christian festival. And I'm like, I realize that, you know? I'm like,
yeah, he pretty much realized, man, I made a huge mistake with these guys.
Tantrum. Oh, yeah, it was bad, Trav. It was bad, you know. But you know what? That's why there's forgiveness.
Absolutely.
Because we need it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, we definitely we had a really hard time being friends for a while there, and had like it was just it went dark, and obviously the band.
Wait, you saying you weren't my friend? You saying during that fight sometime you weren't my friend? What?
You can stop.
Jim, are you there?
Jim, you can stop leaning the microphone closer to your face. It's not plugged in.
Well, I thought it looked good, though.
Yeah, but no one gets.
No one's going to see this.
Oh,
I remember. I love it. We got to get out of the music thing and start talking about what you've been doing with your life since then. But I remember another story.
Oh, here we go.
Yeah. Crutch never really got a lot of touring miles under because we always had to go home and go to work or school or something. So there was we did Troy, New York, and then we drove to a house show in like South Jersey. And I remember I remember being exposed to the games that Tantrum plays when you are on the road with another band. You guys had your jalopy of a van that looked like if, you know, it's we're using it as a tour vehicle or we could set it on fire. Either way, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And we had our bass player's mom's Explorer with it, like a U-Haul trailer. You know, we actually kind of had our act together and we were in somebody else's vehicle. You guys, it was like, it was supposed to be an innocent, like, as we drove by, like, oh, I threw a half a bottle of water on you, ha, 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 because, you know, we were like a bunch of nerds. We were sitting in there reading, like taking naps, and like reading Guitar Tech magazines because my guitarists were nuts. And you guys...
I could just hear, like, classical music on in the car with you guys.
it was actually probably symbolic from death, but that is classic. But
definitely.
You guys, at one point we stopped... And we had substances smeared on our car, and it wasn't.
What kind of substances, Travis?
Well, you know, it was of the fecal variety, and I'm not exactly sure
who goes into a bathroom with a plastic bag and does business.
My cousin,
right? This is who I'm touring with, right?
Yeah,
this is
I hear.
I think
there was a hatchback car involved, and I think Joel, our vocalist, actually, he was like, "I have some studying to do, and I'm not going to get any work done. I'm not going to get any work done in the crutch van because we're all playing music too loud." And then I think he decided to squeeze himself into a car, and that's when, like, stuff was getting smeared over the hatchback in the back where he was laying, and it was utter and complete catastrophic chaos. But anyway,
so there's a couple things that Jim's doing now that I want to talk about.
There you go. That's where I was going.
First of all, what people don't know is that you're like a scholared water scientist.
Right. Well, or I try. I try to be. No, there's a couple things. There's definitely a couple things that is, you know, going on here. I started a company called New Water USA. Am I allowed to say that?
And, yeah.
What are you going to do, sue yourself? I don't... Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. And, sue me! No, but... so I started a company called New Water USA, but I did work in water while with Tantrum. And Steve worked with me back then, too, until I had to fire him. But
yeah, they told you to fire me because they thought that I had AIDS.
Yes. They said,
"Can you believe that crap?
Fire Mr. Aid Boy."
What? I got really sick. I had, long story short, I had mono that I let go really long, and it got really bad to the point where I was throwing up blood and everything, and I had to go home, like leave Delaware, go to my parents' house on rest for a few weeks. When I came back, Jim's like, "Look, man, we're in the band. You live at my house. It's going to be cool, but you're fired." I'm like, "Why? Why am I fired? I'm the victim here. I'm the one who got sick." And he's like, "Dude, they think he got AIDS." And if I had cared about the job, I probably would have been like, "Well, that's discrimination, you know."
Right.
But back then, I just didn't. All I cared about was the band. So, but yeah, you were you already had. Did you already had a degree then, right?
And I was running the lab there and running the process there.
You have a degree in water? What's your degree in?
Electrochemistry.
Okay.
So I carried that through, through touring and, you know, still working for a company doing ion exchange resins. And then when I got, when I moved here to California, when I was in Delaware, Florida, I started another company called OTC Laboratories.
And then, that would have been around 2002-ish?
Something like that, yeah. And then I met Deanne while I was on tour. My wife now is on tour. One thing, girls and boys, get in the band, you'll get married, right? So that's or you'll meet people. Don't have your label
guy. You get married a couple times when you do it that way.
Yeah, and I did, right?
So your current wife, was she on the left side or the right side when Chad scolded you?
No, it was neither. I wish it was, but it was neither. But you know what? I don't even remember. All I remember is talking to them two girls and then waking up with them. That's all I remember. But I don't. Nothing happened.
Unreal. I'm like desperately swinging it back to the water. So, Deanne,
after this,
who was not at Tom Fest?
I met my wife as we were touring, and then and that's what brought me out here to California. So she gave me that ultimatum, you know. I really cared about this girl at the time, and I really thought something was going to go somewhere. And, you know, now we've been married for, 12 years.
Yeah,
so,
man.
Been a long time.
Kids. Yeah, and she's amazing, and she supports all the music and all the late night, you know, recording and starting businesses, because I've started so many businesses, record labels to whatever, and trying to make something go. But when I got back in the water, that's when it really took off for me.
Good for you.
So, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about, like, some of the stuff you're doing with the water business.
Yeah, what is it?
Obviously, there's probably a dime a dozen people who filter stuff out of water.
We manufacture, we make the media. So we're actually, we're kind of like the, how would I say this? The backbone to the, when you filter something, it's basically the media is what is doing the job, not the filter itself. So
the media is like the pellet. So when you pick up a filter and you shake it and you get that you make the stuff that's shaking around.
Yeah, so basically what we can do is we can take a substrate, any type of substrate like diatomaceous earth or carbon or anything like that, and then we can modify the substrate, you know, the surface to it, and then we can pull out radionuclides, the chrome, nickel, zinc, chrome, whatever you want to pull out, VOC, TOC, bacteria, and that's what we do. So when we find a place like, do you remember Aaron Brockovich?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Aaron Brockovich movie down in Hinckley, they had hexchrome. So basically, we became makers of these systems for Hinckley based upon our surface chemistry.
How about that? Wow.
Yeah. So we
That's
get
rad, it, man.
Stuff like that to, you know, we make filters for Japan for radionuclide, you know, removal to you name it, you know, right now we're doing it. You know, right now I have some pretty crazy jobs that, you know, are landing with the government, our U.S. government, and also Panama, and, you know, from Morocco to Panama. So we just opened up offices. So I have an office here in Concord, California. We opened one in China, Mongolia, Panama,
unreal,
Morocco, and then Mexico. Just
two weeks. That's great, man.
Yeah.
See? Hey, listeners, when you started this podcast and you heard all these stories, you didn't think we were going to land on electrochemistry and international offices, did ya?
Yeah, I always laugh.
This is an impressive man that can play bass with his feet and slap you in the throat when you're eating in a restaurant at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Whenever I hear about these updates from Jim, I'm always amazed. Like, he gave up a degree to do the band with us back in the 90s.
Who wants to freaking work? Nobody wants to work. Yeah. We want to tour music, you know?
Oh, my gosh.
It was a good arrangement. Right time, right place, man, right?
Yeah. But now, really, you know, cool. I still do music, you know, and I put this whole other band together, Boar, and trying some different things with that, you know. But, I mean, I love what I do. My wife works with me now. I actually made her CEO for Christmas. So
nice.
Yeah. She didn't want it, but I gave it to her. And,
That's the gift that keeps on giving the whole year.
Yeah. You know.
Merry Christmas, your chief executive officer. And by the way, I'm going on vacation. Bye.
Exactly. We did. We went to Steve's house. Right? We came to visit Steve last month, or 2 months ago, right? Or three months ago.
Oh, wow. You came here in October of last year.
Yeah,
it's
really?
April.
Holy.
It's been a while, man. It's been almost 6 months.
No, April? Really? April, May? No, April.
Yeah, bro, you came out here right on the week my baby was due.
October.
Late October, yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right, 6 months ago.
Hey, he's an electrochemist. Math isn't a strong suit.
Not at all. But you know what, man? Time flies for me. I'm serious, man. I cannot believe that we played 15 years ago or we recorded 15 years ago. I can't. You know? And it's just time flies. But I'm, you know, living life, love life, you know. Hated life with Steve, but I love life now. Because Steve wasn't my friend back then.
Travis can relate. So tell me a little bit more about Bore. B-O-R-E, Bore?
Yeah, it's boring.
Yeah, I see what you did.
The stuff that I've heard from it is actually really good, man. Like, who's in that? Who all's a part of that project?
So we have this guy named his name is Tiago, and he's from Brazil. And so he moved to California, and when he moved here, met him on Craigslist, you know, that whole thing. And then started playing and just throwing files back and forth. And, you know, the guy's really good guitar player. And so we just started, you know, jamming, and then we're like, all right, we got to get a drummer going, you know. And I'll be honest with you, man, we, you know, going through drummers, you know, trying people out to, you know, we had one, and then it was like...
Tell me about it.
You know what I mean? So right now, we're still in the midst of finding a drummer, but, so, you know, I'm programming my ass off, you know. But we do have a drummer who will do stuff for us, but he's not really in the band at this point. So, right. You know. But all good. But yeah, I'm loving the stuff. I'm loving the style. It's something different, I think.
What's the influence? Like, what kind of stuff are you drawing from, or what kind of stuff are you aiming to do?
You know me. I don't listen to anything. Hardly anything.
I know. You were a very strange person when it came to that.
So it's honestly, I have to say, it's all coming from just myself, because I'm not really influenced. I mean, I'm influenced by, I can't say influence. I like certain songs, not bands. I like songs, right? And that's why I don't buy bands.
No, anymore. I remember.
Yeah, and so it's more of I don't know. I wanted something doomish. I wanted something metalish. I kind of like all kinds of music and just kind of throw it together. Sometimes it's weird. Sometimes it's straight up metal. But right now, I think it's from within. That's all I can say.
Yeah. So. I'd like to play a track from it. Now, we have a compilation CD that we're going to be putting out. From Veritas Vinyl, and I'll get more into that conversation probably in the upcoming episodes. But you have a song that's going to be on that compilation, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
The song's called Daughters?
Yes.
Okay. We're going to play the song Daughters from Boar.
Every word that I write, every word that I say, should be stuck in your head. Till the day that you lie dead, just 'cause I want it there. They mean you stay away. You just sabotage the truth just to get your own way. You can't live that way. You can't live or breathe that way. You're all grown now, but you're just a child. But you'll figure it out. Might take you a while. Never think that I don't understand anything that you want me to believe. I don't care, I don't want, I don't need anything from you. I don't show, I don't grow, I don't feel, I don't care. Took away everything. Shove, shove, shove me away.
Interesting song. You care to talk about that at all?
I have a question about Boar. Is it a live? Is it a live project, or is it just a recording thing?
Live. Yeah.
You do? All right. Cool.
Yeah. So it's we're working towards that goal. but we do have a studio in Livermore as well that we can practice at. But we got great gear down there too. But about that song, Steve?
Give me a little bit about that.
Well, that is a letter to my daughter, my daughters. And basically, it's telling them, no matter what they do to me, in the end, I still love them. And a long story behind all that, but that's basically what that song's about.
Right. Oh, that's cool, man.
So knowing from where I come from,
yeah.
How did that make you feel?
It's an unsettling song, Settle. Uh-huh. But you know, it's always a really hard thing to when a marriage or a relationship goes wrong and goes sour and the children are in the middle and.
Right.
I mean, the song's great. The song's really, really intense and it's very well recorded. It sounds amazing. You've always been really good at getting really good songs recorded. We're looking forward to having it on the comp.
The other Hand of Fire project with Corey too, right? That's going on there?
Corey X Underoath.
X Underoath Corey.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to hearing some of that stuff. I was asked to play bass for something like that with you guys, but that never went anywhere. I guess I'm off the project.
I don't know what's going on. Corey's supposed to be recording and doing something, and then it was. I think we all dealt with a drummer. Like we're looking for somebody that. Actually, I think I asked Travis.
Yeah, you did.
And,
at one point, I was in a local band, and the vocalist had a electronic drum set, and you were like, perfect. Right. And then that band broke up. He took his drum set with him, and Jim was like, piss off, and I haven't spoken to you since.
Hey, no, I haven't spoken to you since. Gotcha. No, but that would have been incredible. But, that music, too, is it's metal, but it's straight up old school thrash, you know, but it's cool. Well done. And so we have a new tune that's going to go on that comp as well.
So, oh, right on.
Yeah, or that's what Tim Henderson said, so I don't know.
We're going to talk to him one of these days soon.
Yeah, he's going to edit that. Well, I'm still trying to get his song dialed in, right? Trying to mix that down.
The Warlord track, yeah.
Warlord track.
It's an exciting compilation. We're really excited to bring that to everybody. We're going to be talking about that with Tim Henderson on a future episode.
Shortly.
Yeah, very shortly. In fact, he was supposed to be on tonight. He's one of the couple people we couldn't get lined up with, but we're happy to have Jim Settle.
We settled on Jim Settle.
We settled on Jim Settle.
I was the last resort. I get it. It's all good.
We
haven't spoken to Rick yet, but when we say last resort, Jim, we called like 34 people. Finally, we got you. And thank God you're late. No.
Steve's like, dude, in an hour, can you do this? I'm going, put my kids to bed. I'm going, you know. So, yeah. But no, I was stoked. I was stoked to do it, man. Yeah, nobody cares about me anymore, so I got to do something.
We care about you. We're talking to you. You crazily played bass in an awesome band in front of a lot of people for quite a few years. So,
man,
there's Tantrum fans out there.
Yeah. I don't know, man. It's one of those deals where I just, like, maybe I just don't think about that because we were just doing what we were doing, and it just seemed like time flew. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it was definitely like a dream,
you know? And if we could do it all over again, we would totally do that differently, for sure. There wouldn't be the bottles flying out. There wouldn't be chicks on each, you know.
Stop talking, dude.
Yeah, exactly.
No, it's good. We would probably be a lot more careful about each other's struggles and probably take a step back and go, hey, you know what? Maybe we should stop traveling and stop trying to work so hard on this band right now when one of our brothers can't even freaking, you know, function, you know? And that was, you know, I think everybody had a phase or two or 100, you know, where, you know, they were going through something really dark and needed to not be in a dysfunctional band situation. I think that would probably be my change if I could do it over again. I would say, hey, you know what? Let's be brothers first and the band later.
I have a question for you. I don't know if we want to keep this or not, but let's keep recording anyway. How are your arms?
You know what? During tour, my arms were like crap, you know, and from the tendonitis and stuff, as you know, in the carpal tunnel. But yeah. What's amazing is they don't bother me now at all. So I haven't had an issue since I stopped playing for Tantrum.
I remember after
one night
after a show, I remember Jim Settle sitting down next to me in his cool black leather jacket and he was like, dude, can you put two sugars in that coffee for me? I'm talking like that coffee sitting in front of us, like right there where the coffee would be on the table. Dude, will you put two sugars in there for me? And I was like, are you messing with me? And he's like, no, dude, I can't lift my arms. And I was like, oh, okay. And I'm thinking, he's in Tantrum, and Crutch is a smaller band, and he's big boying me right now. He just wants to see if I'm going to do it. All right, I'll play your game, you little prick. So I rip the sugar, I rip the sugars open, and I dump them in the cup, and he looks right at me, and he goes, Trav, will you stir it for me? And I was like, oh, my God, I'm going to throw this coffee in your stupid face. And so I stirred the coffee for him, and I was like, you want me to drink it for you, too? And I remember
you spit it into my mouth like a bird.
And I remember you leaning over and going on the top of the cup without picking it up. And I was like, what is wrong with you? And that's when you started telling me how bad your arms were. And I was like, your arms are so bad you can't lift a coffee mug. And you're like, it hurts too bad. It just hurts too much. And I'm like, and then the next thing you know, I'm holding the cup for him like I'm feeding the little old man. Like, remember that episode of Seinfeld when she's like, I like my navy beans. I was like, feed me coffee, dude.
You know what's funny? I couldn't even open a door handle. Like, turn a door handle, it hurts so bad. Now I would have to get shots of, what do they call that?
It's a, cortisone.
Zima.
It's cortisone and something steroids. Wow. It's a mixture.
Wow.
And then they wanted to operate on my arms and reroute my tendons. That's when I was like, I'm done. You know?
Did you get any surgery? I'm trying to remember.
No, hell no. No. I just got treatments and somebody told me to take my hand, put my pinky and my thumb together and wrap it with duct tape during the night.
Yeah. I've heard that. Yeah.
Yeah, and I started doing that, and I was doing everything possible. I mean, when I would play a show, it was almost to the point where, as I was playing towards like the the end of the show, like three songs left, it was a struggle and a half.
Yeah.
And that's why I played a lot with my feet. You know what I'm saying? Because I'm dead serious on a lot of parts because. They were the hard parts, not hard parts, but they were like the thrashing parts. So I had to do something. But
you're ridiculous, man.
Dude, if I could play my eyebrows, I would have. But it was, my arms.
Yeah, it's funny. I remember going to a show and leaving a show. You were like an invalid, but you'd get on that stage and you'd play like nothing was wrong.
Did it ever affect your playing? Like, did you ever feel yourself like, I can't even feel the frets, my hands are so shot, or whatever?
No, it wasn't that. It was just the pain that was shooting up my arms as I would play. Especially when I would finger tap, right? Because I played a little differently, you know what I mean? On a lot of different songs, like, just finger tapping and stuff, and it would just kill me.
Wow.
But I ended up getting through this set, but at the end of the set, and every time I played a show, it was like, I was going to play my hardest because I know one day this is going to stop.
Did your arms bother you before you joined the Tantrum?
No.
Did you have your arms bothered you since you quit Tantrum?
No.
Freaking Steven.
We were the problem. Yeah.
Yeah, but I also think it was the parts that we broke. Do you know what I'm saying? They were very complicated. You know what I'm saying?
Parts that you wrote.
Yeah, parts, and
hey,
I
regret that. Jim, with all due respect, you're an amazing bass player, but there's bass players out there better than you that are playing parts more complicated than you that don't need a drummer to stir their coffee
for them. No, you're right. No, dude, I look at it this way, dude. I don't know music. I don't know notes. I don't know anything. I used to
think it would be so funny to put graphic. It's like back, like nowadays, you can just, there's probably an app in your phone where you can just add stuff like that. But the way you used to play your bass, I always pretended that your bass was on fire. And you know how when something lights on fire, you go and start to smack it like you try to put it out. That's how he played the E string.
Yeah.
Wham, 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 wham. And I always thought, how funny would it be if that thing was on fire and Jim was just trying to put it out? That's kind of how it looked like you were playing. And then you can't even put on your jacket after the show. And I was like, this dude's arms are going to fall off in front of us one night.
Yeah.
Oh, man. It's so
good. A lot of, I know a lot of bass players who have tendonitis problems, and it's because of using your fingers, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Not like them pussy punk people who have the pick, you know what I'm saying? But anyway, my arms feel great. I don't have any issues with that, but all the wounds, from Tantrum, ribs busted to I had a couple things pulled and, scrotum.
wait, slow down. You broke ribs in Tantrum?
Well, Steve did, I think. He cracked something. With the freaking
I hit you with a gas station squeegee and it's stuck into your side.
Exactly, I got the scar here in my mouth. Look at this, right in here. Steve,
where is it? I can't see it.
With a squeegee and it's stuck into my sock.
It's stuck.
Oh my god!
I mean, I swung it like an axe at him, We had a physical fight on tour one time, yeah.
We did.
Shame to say.
You're still running your mouth. Remember that?
And then we're in the van rubbing ointment on each other's wounds, laughing like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
Oh,
Take me to the hospital, Steve. So many memories.
Should have had Rick on here.
I could have swore you mentioned scrotum. What happened there?
You know, we were playing, and it was the end of the show, and, you know, the last note, I threw the bit up, and I flipped backwards, and it came right down on my genitals, dude.
That was in New York, and I remember...
I love it.
You asked somebody, one of us...
to get me ice.
To put ice on it for you.
It was the pastor's daughter, or something...
Oh, for crying out loud, of all the people to ask.
She came to bring ice to me, and she says, where would you like me to put it? And I said, all right, well.
Praise Jesus.
I mean, you know. That
sounds like a ploy. My arms are so bad, I can't stir my coffee. Can you put ice on my crotch?
I'm going back to New York, that's for sure. Oh,
that was a really complicated pickup line.
I think that was with you.
Yeah, right. She has to have ice. Who has ice?
Yeah, and you destroyed yourself early on. I remember thinking, we got a whole summer of these shows to go, and you're like laying in the thing, getting ice on your nuts, and someone's rubbing your arms. I mean, you look like all I can remember. You know what you reminded me of? You reminded me of in the movie RoboCop, after RoboCop would come back from fighting crime. And all of his parts were destroyed, and I had to keep replacing them and building them. You were RoboCop getting rebuilt after every show.
Yeah, but you gotta remember, though, I was 9 years older than all you guys. I was the old man in the show, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Not 9 years older than you guys at the time would have made you 29. Give me a break, dude. Yeah.
Come on.
I know, right? I know.
Jim was the guy... He was the comedic character in the full body cast in the movie that can only wiggle his fingers.
Exactly. And one night, want a beer?
Can you scratch my nose? I can't reach it.
I mean, you remember the label showcase at Cornerstone when we got to Devil's House of Techno and we got to the boom, 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 and we're like, where's the bass? And we turn around and you're laying on the freaking ground, passed out. Then. I mean, every time I turned around, dude was like dying from something.
Or hurt. Yeah, I don't know what it was, man. But, you know, the bass was bigger than me, for one, you know?
Yeah.
So that bass kicked my ass every show.
Yeah. I wish we still had that Take Hold Records t-shirt where he did the silhouette of you holding the bass up in the air.
Yeah. That was an awesome pick. That was you? Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember that shirt. I never knew that. I never put that together.
That was Jim.
Get out of here.
At Take Hold Fest. I can actually show you a scene on VHS of that show. You can pause it and see him doing that. And that's where Chad snapped the picture, and it was just amazing timing.
Get out of here.
Yeah. Yeah, man. That's such a story.
That you got to keep. After hearing all these stories, praise the Lord, you're still alive, dude. Jeez.
Amen. Yeah, you know what? Funny thing is, he aged better than we did. You know, we're not even there yet. I'm 37 years old, and I look and feel way worse, I can tell you, than what Jim looks like right now.
He aged better than we did, and he had a squeegee in his room.
he got all his old man stuff out of the way early.
Yep. No, you gotta, you know, it's, I don't know what, you gotta eat cereal. I mean, seriously, Fruit Loops, baby. I'm telling you. Really?
Did your arms hurt before you were in tantrum?
No.
Yeah. All right. We get
Have your arms hurt since you've been in tantrum?
No.
Okay. Fruit Loops. That's what I heard you say. Okay. Just checking.
Is there anything else you want to tell us before we sign off, Jim Settle?
Man, we might have to do another session, but
No, we'll definitely do another session. That would be great.
Jim Settle, I forgot how much I love you, man. It is so great to see you.
Yeah, absolutely, man.
I just want to throw out to anybody who's been listening to this podcast that has never heard the band Tantrum of the Muse, go look up Tantrum of the Muse. The album was called Modern Music 2000. Just sit back and enjoy the tale. It's an amazing album. I have met people that have told me Modern Music is their favorite album. It's
wow.
Album. Yep.
That's really cool.
That so, I wish I could remaster and remix.
I've got the reels sitting right here in my room.
Yeah,
man.
Go ahead.
We'll do it.
We should do that.
We will. We'll get it on vinyl too, where it belongs.
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
thanks for saying so, Travis. And
yeah, thanks, man.
You got it. Yeah,
and
man.
Props to Rick, your drummer too. He did an amazing job. He was an influence on me, believe it or not. But
wow.
As always, we appreciate the time taking the time to listen to our little corner of the internet here, and we'll see you next week for another story.
All right.
Love you, Jim.
Hey, love you guys.
Take care, buddy.
All right, man.